We're talking about the growth in large-scale farms, these concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The number of CAFOs here in Wisconsin has risen every year since 2005. The vast majority are dairy operations. But now a few Wisconsin counties and municipalities are putting a temporary block on these mega farms. Do you live in a county with a CAFO moratorium? What's your take on the policy? What environmental concerns do you have about phosphorus and nitrate pollution? Have you noticed the impact? If you're a farmer, how do you balance your farm's business model for growth with environmental concerns? We're at 800-642-1234. Erin Jordan is an investigative reporter for The Gazette in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, where she covers agriculture and water quality issues. Erin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's a real pleasure.
Well, let's start by looking at these moratoriums. Burnett County passed a one-year moratorium on large-scale farms with 1,000 or more animals. We saw Eau Claire County and then the township of Marietta, they implemented similar rules. What are these local governments trying to do here?
Well, I think the idea of a moratorium is just to allow the township or the county time to consider the ramifications of these different facilities, maybe to look at what's happened in other places when some of these large facilities have come in, to maybe look at the record of the people who are planning to operate it and see whether they've had water quality issues in other places. And, I think, frankly, they just want to slow down the expansion of these large-scale facilities. In Iowa, there's been a real push from some environmental groups to get a statewide moratorium, and that just hasn't moved forward. But I think it's some of the same ideas.
Why hasn't a statewide moratorium moved forward? What have been the roadblocks there?
Well, primarily it's just, farmers. They say, well, this is our land. We have a right to do with it what we need to do in order to, make money for our family. It's no secret it's been a tough time for agriculture, both on the dairy side and also in the commodity side. So, some of these farmers, in order to make ends meet, have decided to use a relatively small portion of their land, maybe to put up a hog confinement. And that has maybe helped them pay the bills during these tough times.
And we'll get to hogs in just a moment here. But what do you make of a county-by-county regulation approach to CAFOs? Is that the best way to regulate CAFOs?
I mean, I think it makes sense because different counties or townships have different sentiments about development. And, I think, it's kind of that idea of local control. And if the people locally want to take time to study it, it seems to make sense to do it that way instead of maybe taking too broad of an approach statewide. And maybe if it starts at a local level and expands out, maybe that's a better way to go than trying to get something passed at a statewide level and being unsuccessful.
Erin, do we know what economic impact these moratoriums have had on business development in their areas? Do you have any sense there or numbers?
I don't know. I think it's relatively new these areas are trying it. I'm sure those that are arguing against moratorium would say, hey, while we put this hold on development, we're going to lose out on these major operations that could provide jobs, that could provide tax revenue. So we may be looking to Wisconsin to see how it's working in those counties.
Well, let's look at hogs here for a moment. In Burnett County, where they just passed this one-year moratorium on CAFOs of 1,000 or more animal units, as they say, an Iowa company announced plans for a 26,000 hog operation. What is the state of hog farming in the Midwest?
Yeah, it's really huge. In Iowa has 7 pigs to each human in Iowa, which I think is kind of baffling. There's 20 million pigs being raised each year in Iowa, according to the Iowa pork producers. So in Wisconsin, I just was looking at some data online. It looked like there were about 325,000 hogs in Wisconsin. So quite a bit less, and that's probably because of the dairy industry, being the primary focus there. But I do wonder, that operation that you mentioned moving into Burnett County, that is going to be run by an Iowa company, Cumberland LLC or Suede Health. I don't know how that's pronounced. And so I think that there may be some expansion. It seems to me it's not necessarily a coincidence that the areas that have put these moratoriums on are kind of near the Iowa border. I wonder if there's just concern that hog industry could be expanding across from Iowa into Wisconsin more than it has, or maybe more than we've seen those hog facilities from other places.
We're looking at the growth of CAFOs, these large livestock operations, with Erin Jordan. She's an investigative reporter for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. She covers ag and water quality issues. Farmers, we want to hear from you. Do you live in a county with a CAFO moratorium? What's your take on the policy? What would you like to see from state government on the issue of water quality and management? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Erin, help us understand what an animal unit measurement is and how does it differ from dairy cows to hogs to beef cattle?
That's right. Yeah, I think this is can be interesting. So the moratoriums that you've described are for facilities of 1,000 animal units or more. So one animal unit is equivalent to one beef cow. So 1,000 animal units would be 1,000 beef cows. But because milking cows are larger, that's only about 715 milking cows. 1,000 animal units is equivalent to about 2,500 finishing hogs. So those are the largest hogs. So it sometimes can be a little misleading when you see 1,000 animal units if you don't know those conversions.
So they really take into account the animal's size in order to understand what a total animal unit is.
Right. And I think the big thing, too, is because they're looking at what these animals produce. They're looking at the manure, how much space they would take up, and that kind of thing. So you could see why they might want to have it be equivalent for different size animals.
We've seen Wisconsin losing dairy farms at record-breaking numbers. The state lost 638 farms last year. Farmers are trying to expand or diversify their operations to stay above board. How have you seen hog operations factor into that?
Well, I don't have all the numbers for Wisconsin, but there is a fantastic series that the Journal Sentinel has been doing, talking with farmers about the challenging times in the dairy industry. And, some of those folks have tried to, get into cheese, adding a creamery, things like that. But if you can, further diversify and open up a hog facility, that may help you as well, to kind of have more stability across markets. It doesn't take a lot of land on your facility, to have a hog confinement. You don't need to have grazing maybe as much space as you might for a milking facility. So it may be that some farmers are looking to expand that direction.
Well, you would still have to deal with manure and what you're going to do with the waste. What have we seen there in terms of how manure is disposed of, spread on these CAFO operations?
Yeah, that's something that's been really interesting in my reporting. So most of these operations across the Midwest, if they are of a certain size or like medium to large, they have to have a manure management plan, which shows how they're going to dispose of the manure generated by their animals. And I've talked to a number of folks in this industry who say that it's really not profitable if you have to haul your manure more than maybe 7-8 miles away from your facility. So you need to find a plan, find a farmer, whether it's, your own corn, soybean acres or another farmer, who wants you to spread the manure there. And often they do because it's, it's a very rich fertilizer for your land. But if you get to a place where the density of these operations is so high, that there may not be enough land to spread the manure without making it too expensive by having to haul it a longer distance.
And that's what's happening in Northwest Iowa.
Yes, there's a couple of areas in Northwest Iowa and kind of spreading into South Dakota that it's such high density that they're having trouble a little bit, or they may be approaching it having enough places to haul their manure. And one of the risks there is that farmers may start applying it at a rate that is too high, that's higher than the recommended rate. There was a great study that the University of Iowa did this last year where they looked at how much nitrate had been applied in some of these areas, and they found it was 2 to 3 times the recommended rate, and that they believe that is linked to just the high density of the CAFOs.
Well, when you talk with environmental groups, what is their approach? What CAFO regulations and farm practices are they in favor of?
I think that some folks who are environmental researchers have they would like to see some pretty drastic changes. Others are really fairly reasonable. They think, we could really make just a few minor changes and maybe have some dramatic impact in terms of water quality, not farming in floodplains any longer. We've seen just with climate change, we've seen more and more floods. Well, if you're not planting in the floodplain, that could be very helpful. Perhaps not doing just trying to avoid fall tillage, going to no-till if possible, just so you don't have this exposed soil that can erode over the course of the winter. So I think some of these guys think you could just make a few minor changes and make a big improvement.
We're talking with Erin Jordan. She's an investigative reporter for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Do you live in a rural community? What challenges have you seen when it comes to water quality? We're at 800-642-1234 talking about CAFOs. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at large livestock operations, these CAFOs, and the growth of them here in Wisconsin. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The number of CAFOs in our state has more than doubled since 2005. The largest dairy CAFO in Wisconsin houses more than 9,000 cows. Manure is a big concern. We've been talking about CAFOs are regulated under the Federal Clean Water Act. What environmental concerns do you have about phosphorus and nitrate pollution? Have you noticed the effect here in Wisconsin? Do you live in a county with a CAFO moratorium? What's your take on the policy? Join in, 800-642-1234. Erin Jordan stays with us. She's an investigative reporter at the Gazette in Cedar Rapids, where she covers ag and water issues. Let's go to the phones now with Jerry joining us from Wilton. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
Go ahead.
We live in a small town, and there's a farm right in town with an open manure pit that it exudes terrible, terrible smells very frequently. I just wondered if there's anything the residents can do to have the farmer abate those smells or do something to prevent all of those horrible smells almost every day.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. Erin, what are the regulations around odor management?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that, Jerry. There's right now the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture is taking public comment on a proposal that would allow more control for odor management. And I think that this law would require that these facilities set their barns and lagoons back from the edge of their property. So if you, have, say 100 acres, you'd have to have it in the middle of that instead of on the edge of that, where, maybe closer to the person's own house versus on the edge of their property where the smells can drift elsewhere. I know in Iowa there's been a lot of conversation about whether odor management works, which techniques work. A lot of people put up trees, but then, others say, hey, that might shield what we can see of this facility, but it does not necessarily shield the odors. So it will be interesting to see what the public comment period comes forward with in Wisconsin about those setbacks.
Jerry, thanks so much. Let's go to Stephen now, joining us from Bayview. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So it's not, it's been a trend that we're getting hotter summers, and it's been more uncomfortable in summer. And one thing I've noticed is in areas that are downstream from these CAFOs, you get more algae blooms and you get more contamination all around. There's regulations in place, but they really don't protect, you know, all the lakes and ecosystems that are around the CAFOs.
Stephen, thanks. Aaron, what can farmers do to manage runoff and attempt to keep the groundwater safe from contaminants?
Well, let me say, Stephen, first of all, your observation, it seems completely borne out by some of the early studies we've had. There was a U of I study, University of Iowa study this last year, looking at some of the areas in northwest Iowa with the highest number of CAFOs, and they had the highest levels of nitrate in the streams, which some people might say, well, duh, that makes sense. But it was kind of this first quantitative assessment of that. And I've been reporting right now about an area in western Ohio where they have a lot of animal production, and they have a lake there, Grand Lake, that's just been really struggling with algal blooms. And they implemented some bans on spreading manure during times when the ground is frozen, and they've put some new restrictions on farmers. And in addition to wetlands and other things they've implemented, they've really seen some improvements. So I think, areas where residents are very concerned about those algal blooms and what it's doing to their recreation, I think there can be pressure applied in terms of when that manure is used.
You've also been covering the Gulf Hypoxia Task Force, this 12-state plan to reduce nitrate in the Mississippi River. What progress has been made there?
Yeah, that's a big reporting project that I did this last year with some students at Marquette University in Milwaukee. And we basically dug into what was happening in these 12 states, talked to a lot of officials, read their nutrient reduction plans. And what we discovered is in the 10 years since they made this commitment for the 45% reduction in nitrate and phosphorus, very little change has happened. Most of the states don't even have a baseline of what the nitrate and phosphorus was before. They don't know whether changes have happened. There is increased regulation on a lot of wastewater treatment plants, like city wastewater treatment plants or industries, but still, in most states, very little regulation, if any, on agriculture. And since those ag sources or the non-point sources are where a lot of the nitrate and phosphorus are coming from, there just really hasn't been much improvement.
We're talking with Erin Jordan. She's an investigative reporter for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. We're looking at CAFOs. She covers agriculture and water quality issues. Let's bring in Katie now, joining us from Janesville. Hi, Katie.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Just something to keep in mind with some of the CAFOs. There is technology out there for the farmers. It's very expensive at this point, but I can think of a couple different farms nearby that use dehydrators on the manure. They actually dehydrate the manure and then treat it, and they turn it back into bedding. They recycle everything on that farm. There's another one where they're called digesters. It's like a great big tub or container that has bacteria that actually breaks down all the manure so that it's safer to use or to be able to put back out on the land so that we don't have all the runoff. An example of that would be Rock County. We have a farm where we had a dairy breakfast, and the line was extremely long, and it wound right around the manure pit, and nobody even knew it was a manure pit.
Wow.
They couldn't see it, they couldn't smell it, but that farm uses the newer technology. In today's world with the dairy farms, they don't have the money coming in right now to be able to use that technology.
Katie, thanks. Yeah, thank you for the call. And I want to bring in Aaron here. Biodigesters were just the way of the future. And, you know, around 2000, they came on the scene about. Is that right?
That sounds right. I mean, probably a few people were trying them that soon.
Yeah. Are farmers reluctant at all to use this type of advanced technology due to cost?
Yeah, I think what Katie describes is the fact, is just that it's too expensive for most operations. I just love the idea that she's, the picture she's painting of this breakfast where you're right there around the animals, but you don't smell them at all. You know, I know of one facility in northeast Iowa, so real close to the Wisconsin border, where they are trying to have a 10,000 head cattle operation and a digester. It's had real trouble getting open, getting started. So I don't know. I'm guessing that money is holding them up. But, I mean, it's a great idea, the idea that you could generate methane from these digesters, that the waste product would be a lot easier to dispose of. But I think it's just the cost that's the main hurdle.
Well, as we start to wrap up here, we haven't really touched on cover crops and no-till farming. Are those practices on the rise at all here as we look at what to do with the waste?
Yeah, you know, a lot of farmers are really trying to be good stewards of their land, planting cover crops, which are basically like an off-season crop that protects the ground from erosion and helps reduce runoff. So in Wisconsin, there were 82,000 acres of federally subsidized cover crops, which is up from 60,000 acres in 2017. So that's a pretty big jump, but just to put that in perspective, that's still less than 1% of all the corn and soybean acres. So still a just a very small portion of the land there. So the good news is there's a lot of room for improvement. And for each farmer who tries that, their neighbors see how it's working and can learn from that. I think the numbers I saw for 2018 for no-till were about 34,000 acres in Wisconsin.
Aaron, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Kate.
Aaron Jordan is an investigative reporter for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, where she covers ag issues. We've been talking about CAFOs, these large livestock operations, and Wisconsin has several hundred livestock farms that would fall into this category. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.